Well, welcome to Live Local Radio on 97.1 FM. Well, I guess it's not really live, but it is kind of live here as we're talking today. This is actually a pre-recorded show, which is awesome. We're going to have all sorts of fun here today. I am your host, David Keyes. We have some people here today to talk about arsenic and old lace and a few other things today. And I've got my favorite daughter riding shotgun next to me. Welcome, Olivia. Glad to see you. I'm glad you're here. You don't have a microphone, but she's nodding like she should. That's awesome. Very good. We are looking for just a great show today. Again, we're going to be taping this live now, but not live when you're listening to it. So if there's anything that says tag, if you can help me with this, if we say anything like, how about those Mariners? That's a week from now. They may not even be playing at that point. I don't even know. So we're going to find out for sure. A couple things going on. One, in my world, especially with the world of Rotary International, October 24th, which in my calendar tells me that's Friday, the day after this is being recorded, is World Polio Day. And I see two young actors. Well, you guys are all younger, except me, you. I don't know. Have you ever heard of polio? And what do you know about polio?
I mean, I know that it is pretty much eradicated now.
That's exactly right. That's the answer we're looking for, because Rotary International is leading the charge. We're down to several cases in Afghanistan and Pakistan, but we're revaccinating a lot of people around the world right now too. And one of the goals with Rotary is to eradicate polio, so I'm glad you're on board with that for sure. Rotary has spent billions of dollars to help fight this. We have people all over the world, again, mostly in Africa, Afghanistan, Pakistan, giving those shots out and those drops all the time to make the world a better place. And you'll be hearing a little bit more about that around the world, because, again, we're hitting it hard. And my hope and what I'm hearing from the scientists right now is that polio will be eradicated within 5 to 6 years. And as part of Rotary, we lead the charge on that. And I want to be part of that winning team when this terrible scourge goes away. You know, you don't hear anybody anymore with new cases of smallpox, do you? Ever heard of smallpox? No. You know why? Because it's been eradicated through vaccination years ago, and there's no new cases that way, and it's gone. That's the first disease that mankind has ever wiped off the face of the earth. And so we want polio to be the number two, and we're getting closer all the time. So if you want to help out, you can go to rotary.org, and you can donate some money. And right now, it's kind of cool. The Gates Foundation is matching 2-for-1. So every $1 somebody puts in, they're going to give $2 more to help fight polio. They've been doing that for a few more years. They promised to do that until polio is gone again, knock on wood, in 7 or 8 years. So we're hoping for that. So Tag, how are you?
I am pretty good. How are you?
You know, we were kind of joking earlier about it. It's hard to say. We're a week away from what's going on. So how about those Mariners? What do you think?
I think it's going to be over. I think they're going to win, and it's all going to be good.
Oh, good. Okay.
That's what I'm hoping. Now, when we come back in another week, and it's horrible.
I won't even be around.
I'll
be down in Albuquerque, but I'll be thinking of you at that point.
There you go. Sure. Yeah, so, that'll work. So. Just fine.
And we are recording this on a beautiful fall day, too. Blue skies. It was a little bit cool this morning. A little frost last couple days, but by the time I get back in a week or so, gosh, it'll be maybe, what do you think? Snow?
No, I hope there's no snow. Maybe in the mountains. The mountains is just fine. Down here, Hopefully it's clear blue skies, no snow on the ground. But we'll see what happens.
And right now we have a little touch of snow at Schweitzer.
A little bit. I kind of like that, though.
I do, too.
I like that, yeah.
I do, too. So anyway, so I think what we'll do is we'll take our first break, and then we come back. We'll be talking to Tim Bangle and some people from the LPO, Lake Pondre
Repertory.
There you go. So we'll be talking about a cool play coming up soon, and we've got two actors here talking about their parts, hopefully. So, and they're smiling and giving thumbs up right now. So that's the one bad thing about radio, Tag, is you know, all this effervescence is coming out here, but it's wasted on me. So anyway, we'll come back right after the break, and we'll talk about arsenic and old lace. Well, welcome back to Live Local Radio. We have a great play in the works, and I'm so lucky right now to see, I think, are you the director, Tim?
Yes, sir.
Is that what you are? Perfect. Yes. And we've got some great actors here talking about arsenic and old lace. How about a show of hands out there if you ever heard of the play? Show of hands. Okay, now while hopefully you're not driving, but show of other hands, if there was a local production here, say, at the end of the month and the first part of the next month, would you go to it? Show of hands. Perfect. So now, hopefully you're still driving and you're safe and all that, but the crew is here, part of the crew is here to tell us a little bit about this play and some of the work that goes into it, and it's getting ready to roll out, isn't it?
Yeah, we go into Tech Week next week, and Tech Week is what we call, like, the last kind of refinement where we start incorporating costumes and makeup and microphones and the set. We open next Friday.
And that great voice is Tim Bengel. So there you go. Welcome. Hello. Welcome. And I think you have some guests here with you today.
Yeah, with me I brought Corey Repass and Toby Jensen. The community is very familiar with Corey. He's done pretty much every LPO show since its beginning. Toby's new to us and new to main stage productions, I think.
Yeah.
I'll let each of them kind of go through their background if they want.
Well, Tim, let's do that right now for sure. So why don't you tell us all about yourself and why you decided to step up and memorize lines in front of an audience?
Well, I was raised in Bonners Ferry, so local here. During high school age, I had some experience with Missoula Children's Theater, got to do some productions with them, really loved it, really just like the camaraderie of that many people coming together and learning how to do something and then like doing it for other people. You're doing it for art and for making other people happy, and I think that's a really great thing. I moved down here to Pendere this last year, and my therapist actually told me I needed to get out and make some friends and
share your sunshine.
She was like, you need something to do. You need a hobby. And I was like, I don't have anything that I want to do. And she was like, you said you love theater. I'm like, I don't know about any theaters around here. And she was like, there's this one. Go audition. And I was like, fine. Nice. So I did. And everyone has been really amazing. You guys are all just really sweet people.
Aren't they nice people?
I love them all so much.
Yeah, well, they're lucky to find you as well, too. So were you the kind of precocious kid in class that kind of was always the center of attention?
Was homeschooled.
Oh.
And middle child, so I was never the center of attention.
No. So this is good therapy for you. I can see this now.
But, I mean, that's not quite true. I was definitely the kid who pushed the boundaries and was like, I want to do this, I want to do that. Like, going and doing the plays was not something any of my older siblings had done, something all my younger siblings did after me. So,
right.
Props to me for that. But no, it was never really like a lot of socialization in general.
Gotcha. And what is your role?
I'm playing Elaine Harper. She is the fiance of Mortimer Brewster, who's the main character, and kind of spends the entire play just trying to figure out what in the world is going on and whether or not her fiance, who is distracted, very distracted, with other things that he won't tell her about,
right,
actually cares about her or not.
Right.
So
right.
It's a kind of fun to just play.
Had you heard of Arsenic and Old Lace before?
I hadn't really heard of the play. I mean, I'd heard of, like, I knew that there was, like, a movie production that was based on, because it's based off of some crimes that happened, like, over on the East Coast a long time ago. And so I knew about those. I'm a true crime person. Oh. Like to, I don't want to say fan, that's weird. But like to listen to those stories and stuff. And so I'd heard like the story it was based off of, but I didn't know there was like a play that made it, you know, funny.
So your therapist suggested, but you jumped on it to try out, to rehearse for this. And was it a natural part for you? Did it seem like it flowed to you, or did you have to really work to make this thing happen?
I mean, Elaine is a pastor's kid. I'm that too. So I don't want to say camaraderie there, but like
a connection for sure in your life.
Yeah.
Sure.
I'm like, okay, I get this. When we had our first sit down about who she was going to be, my first question was, what denomination is she?
Oh, was that a 50 or 100 or 20?
I was like, what is this? Are we Catholic? Are we Protestant? Are we like, what background am I looking at here? Which I think was something completely unnecessary and ridiculous, but it was what
when
I
when she asked me that question, I was completely unprepared.
Did you?
Yeah, completely.
What was your answer, I wonder?
I think we landed on Episcopal, right?
Episcopal.
Did you? Oh, okay.
Because the church is, she lives right next door to the people, and there's a mention in the play of an Episcopal church right down the road. Okay. And I was like, that's really cool. I just went and happened to visit an Episcopal church here in town because I wanted to see what their services was like. And I was like, I did that like 2 or 3 months ago, so... I wouldn't say I'm an expert, but I've got an idea.
You were there. So this was your first stage experience then?
First, like...
Except Missoula like, Children's
yeah,
Theater type.
Like, that's like a week of prep, and then you go out and do it. But yeah, this is first time doing anything.
A lot of
like
memorization?
This.
Is it tough?
Yes.
Is that a natural thing for you?
Yeah. I've always been pretty good at memorizing stuff. Took violin lessons and, like, memorized notes and, you know... I memorization is something that has always been really easy for me.
Well, good. And you're sitting next to, are you guys co-stars? I mean, I don't even know how many cast members do you have, Tim?
I think it's a cast of 16, 17, something like that.
Wow, there you go. Okay.
It's much smaller than Christmas Carol was.
Yeah, no kidding. All right. So, Toby, tell us a little bit about you. Tell us a little bit about how you got pulled in this direction and why you star in every show that's on stage at the Panada.
Because I have no respect for my own time.
And you can't say no, is there?
Yep, that's very accurate. I've been doing shows regularly since 2013 in the community. I've been doing theater since 2004. Oh. So it's been a minute. I play Jonathan Brewster, brother to Mortimer Brewster, and I would not call us co-stars. There is one very intense scene between the two of us, though.
I guess you have to go and see that, apparently, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good teaser. That's awesome. That really, really is.
Yeah, it gets intense.
So you've grown up on the stage here in Sandpoint a bit.
I was molded by the stage.
There you go. What's your favorite role so far? What have you enjoyed the most?
That is such a tough question.
That's why I'm here.
Like, I think the most meaningful play I've ever done was The Laramie Project.
Oh.
Which that was in 2019, I believe, directed by Dorothy Prophet, who is also in the show.
Oh, good. Good.
I think my favorite role was Sir Toby Belch in Twelfth Night. the last big role that I did was Scrooge in Christmas Carol.
Right.
And that one, I mean, after the first show, it was my first time being a lead character after all these years. So I came out to people applauding me and I cried. It was a long time coming.
Right.
And I told myself I wasn't going to do it.
Right.
But I cried.
Right. Well, how about the Panada? What a great location. My gosh. I mean, what a venue. I mean, the historic. I mean, isn't it cool to have a venue like that in our community?
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
I did shows back in high school there. Like Annie Get Your Gun and Camelot were my first two shows there.
And what year did you graduate from high school?
96.
96.
So I think it was like 95, 96 is when I did stuff back then.
Yeah. I mean, there's just a great history there. There really is.
And back when the Panada had an orchestra pit.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah. How about that? Mike, you don't remember that, but you know, it was what a great success story for Sandpoint to save the Panada too. I mean, good gosh, and just to think all of the stuff that goes through there now. I mean, they're busy 200 plus nights out of the year, and then sometimes they have even more than a couple shows going on for sure too. So Tim, tell me a little bit about and tell us all about. How do you go about picking a cast? I mean, how many people want to rehearse and do all this kind of stuff to make this production happen?
I don't know how many want to. Originally, there was a number of people that I reached out to and asked them to audition because I had specific people in mind for characters in the show. But then people like Toby showed up, and then Eric, who plays Mortimer, showed up, and it completely changed the casting choices. It's a lot about the chemistry, a lot about their ability for me to stay in character 100% of the time on stage, because I do film as well. So that's an important aspect of what I look for during theatrical auditions.
Right.
Not just deliver their lines in a fashion that makes the character come across, but a lot of the character is in their subtleties and non-speaking time on stage.
Is it a lot of work? I mean, I'm such a noob in this thing. I mean, I sit out there and I enjoy a great production like this, but I don't understand probably how much work goes on behind the scenes to make something like this happen.
Once the show's been cast, I pretty much trust the actors to do their part. I don't spend a lot of time talking about the nuances of the character. I think we sat down. Christmas Carol was a little bit different, but for this show, I met with most of the actors before rehearsals started and gave them all a color. And the reason I did a color this show is because the show's done in black and white. So all of the costumes, all of the set components is all very shades of black, white, gray. Okay. And so I wanted the characters to be representative by a color. And Toby, I think, was yellow. Mm-hmm. And Jonathan was obviously black. So,
well, very good. Well, how about this? We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit more about Arsenic and Old Lace coming up starting on the 24th. Holy smokes, right around the corner. And then through the 26th, and then the 31st. First and second will be matinees coming up there too. So
26th and the 2nd, yes.
Yeah, perfect. And tickets are available online?
LPORep.com.
Very good, good, good. Well, we'll talk more with the actors and the mastermind behind the show right after this break. And welcome back to Almost Live Radio on 97.1 FM and streaming online 24/7 at NorthIdahoRadio.com. I'm here with Tim and the Masterminds and some of the greatest artists ever to touch the Panada stage right here in front of us today, talking about Arsenic and Old Lace. We were talking about the Pondery Paddler off the air a little bit here too, and there's a debate raging whether it's a real or not, and I know it's real, but I've been told it's not across the table here. So anyway, good to know. Tim, you've been a part of the stage at the Panada forever, it seems like now, the 90s, you said, right? Yeah. What's the state of acting in Sandpoint? I mean, this seems like this is a funnel to the Panada for sure, but what else is going on out there? I know there's a lot of different activities going on.
With theater?
Yeah.
Well, I think the only real active group other than LPO is the Honey Pearl Productions right now.
Oh.
And they just did their first show this last Christmas time or springtime.
Yeah, about Easter.
Yeah, Easter. But aside from that, I think it's just the two of us. There's hidden, you know, groups. There's still groups around. Dorothy's still got Cade Profit Productions, but she doesn't have anything on the books for any time in the future.
Gotcha.
And there's Chris Heron's group, and Ben Olson has a group too. Teresa Pesci she tries to do one show a year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a pretty active theatrical community.
It is for a community our size, right? I mean, I guess that's the scale, that's what I was thinking of. It seems like we have always something going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We try to do two shows a year. We just did Patsy Cline in August. It was supposed to be in May, but we moved it to August.
How did that go? I was out of town. I heard it was great.
It was fantastic.
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
Yeah.
It was a really good time.
Very good. And it was at the Panada, or
no,
was it?
At the Hive.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very good.
Three shows. Yeah.
So give me a little background on this. So you thought of Arsenic and Old Lace. You thought that was something you wanted to do.
No, not at all.
Oh, good. Even better.
not at all.
I want to know how it bubbles up. So here's a project you didn't want to do, and how does it come to reality?
I was requested to do, after Murder on the Orient Express, Dorothy was talking to me. She's like, hey, Kate wants to do this show. I don't want to direct it. You seem like a good fit. So I took it home. I read it. It's a funny script. It's fast-paced. I'm like, yeah, let's do it. And around that same time, I was putting together my 5-year theater show plan. So I try to do a film production and a theater production, one of each a year. And so Arsenic was originally slated for 2027, I think, for me. And we had some changing of the guard, so to speak, at LPO. Keeley moved to Spokane, and I stepped in as artistic director. So we restructured our show lineup. And yeah, it wasn't something that I picked. So looking at the show, and I know its history, it's a great story. It's been done a lot over the years. And so I was like, how do I make it mine? Something that I can be passionate about. And so that's where the black and white came in. We've got a lot of metaphor built into the visuals. I started looking at the show and the cast, or the characters within the show, is they're all in an asylum already, and this is kind of just one of their activities that they do, right? So the set has elements of padded wall built into it, and we have some other fun little twists that we build into the set as the show goes, to kind of build on the metaphor, and as the world starts to fall apart, when things start happening, when Jonathan arrives. So that's how I built it into my own.
Mm-hmm.
We could have easily just done it like everybody else does it, and just put a house set on stage, but that would have been boring.
Right, right. You weren't even tempted to do that, though, right?
I mean, no, never crossed my mind.
If you're going to own it, you're going to own it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Right. And for actors, is that fun to know there's a kind of a twist on this, because this isn't your out of the box arsenic and old lace? Is this kind of fun?
Oh yeah, yeah. No, having a different approach to it definitely makes it a lot more. It makes it a lot more fun to play with, because you know, if we've got a slightly different skew to it, take a peek at it from that angle and see what we can find.
Right.
It's really great.
And Elaine has fun out there? Is it a good, is that good, a good role?
The role is good. She's not having fun.
I'm going to say, I don't think so. I was trying to go back in my mind. In fact, as you know, with my show prep, I knew all about arsenic and old lace coming into this. And I thought, wait a second, I saw that a long time ago, and I thought, that wasn't a fun role.
I'm so, having fun. Yeah. She is not.
Yeah. Yes. Very, very good. Very good. So it takes a while for you to mold. It takes you a while to mold how you want to see it. And so then now you start picking characters and actors for that at that point? Or what part of the process do you start figuring out, hey, I kind of want Toby. Hey, I kind of want this person there.
I didn't know Toby until she auditioned. So she wasn't in my mind as somebody that could fill the role of Elaine.
Yeah.
No, I developed the concept months before we even start auditions. Like, I'm directing Midsummer Night's Dream next in the spring. We have auditions in December. I have the basic concept in mind already. And so I start there months in advance. And then once we get the cast, then I can see what the personalities of the actors bring to the story and kind of try to capitalize on their personality within the character.
Yeah. Is that fun for you to watch somebody who you know some history with, but in no history with another person here, and to watch them kind of own that persona?
I mean, oh, yeah. It's a good time. I start to worry when they're not embodying their character mm-hmm. as an actor. If they're not having fun, it shows. Right.
How do you, as the chief, how do you change that? If somebody's really kind of struggling, perhaps, whether memorization, whether owning the part, or whatever else, how do you, as the producer, say, hey, wait a second, director, how do you say, I'd like to talk to you about it, how do we work
together?
Yeah, yeah.
I just try to be the best that I can be and try to drive by example. And so I haven't really had to struggle with that a whole lot. Everybody that I've ever worked with knows their part. They know the urgency. Mm-hmm. There are times where we struggle with lines, and I try not to add extra stress that I know that they're already feeling. Sure. Right? We don't have any slackers in this cast. We've never had any slackers in any of the casts and the shows that I've done. And so I just try to be patient and allow them to feel whatever they're feeling and motivate themselves. If they're like, I know we did have one show a couple years ago where it was an issue. And we worked around it. We found ways to incorporate the lines on stage at the time so that the story could go on, but I haven't really had to deal with that yet.
Mm-hmm. So you have, what you said, 16 or so cast members on this.
Yeah.
How many of them have been in plays with you before?
Out of this cast, it's Dorothy, Corey, Angel, Cody. I'd say about 50% of this cast has done shows with me. This is the first time I've actually directed Kate on stage, Kate McAllister. I've done the film with her for years, so I'm familiar with her acting and the relationship that I have with her. It's the first time with Toby and some of the other cast members.
Yeah, yeah. How about that? So you're kind of building a bench, though, right? I mean, that's the idea. So when you come up with other ideas, you kind of have people you've seen in different roles before, and you kind of maybe think about them a little bit for those roles, I would assume.
Yeah, I made the mistake with this show to have preconceived notions on who I wanted in the show,
right.
And then that didn't happen for a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt obligated to cast them because I had discussions with them about it too, and I'm like, crap, I'm not going to do that again.
Right.
I'm just going to show up to auditions and make the best decision with the people that show up.
Right.
I don't... And it's worked for the shows that we've done, because we usually get really strong people for the roles that we're casting for as a result. I don't want to limit my creativity by picking actors that I'm comfortable with.
Sure. That makes a lot of sense, for sure.
Yeah.
So you must be comfortable with these two because you brought them to the radio show. So yeah. All is well?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Well, very good. Has this been a hard gig for you guys? I mean, has this been tough to learn, to own it, to get rolling? Because you're getting close now to showtime, for sure. So I guess now's the time to own it.
I suppose finding the character was a little tough. I usually don't have trouble finding the character. I'm a character actor. I find a body position, torque myself like this, and I'm in character. Okay. This one's been a little tougher because... Jonathan has a eerie stillness to him, mm-hmm. and I'm very mobile.
Right.
I do a lot of movement. If you watched me on Murder on the Orient Express, my head was moving all the time while I was talking because I was flamboyant.
Right. Right.
Total opposite with Jonathan.
I didn't really start to see Jonathan out of Corey until just a couple weeks ago.
Right. Right.
Is when he started to really find his groove and feel the character.
It feels good now. It feels bad, but it feels good to be bad.
Right, right. Again, it's all acting, right? So good for you for doing that. And how did it come together for you? Did it seem like it was a natural fit, or have you had to kind of push yourself into it?
I definitely had to push into, I mean, this is, you know, the 1940s. She's a lot more refined and polite than I am. So finding the kind of, like, sereneness... Not that she spends most of the thing serene, but that's the base we're coming off of. And so I have to think about, like, okay, where the craziness that's happening around her is not normal. And I need to act like that's not a normal thing. Like, I'm not normally, you know, like.
That's not me.
Yeah. I'm a chaos person. So finding that not comfortable in chaos was definitely a I wouldn't say a challenge, but really interesting.
Right.
And a lot of fun.
Well, again, being new to this whole world and being kind of surrounded by people who've been doing it for a while, that must be kind of a good experience for you.
Oh, yeah. It's really good to have people who know what they're doing and who know the ropes. I'm really grateful for that. And I'm not just saying that because they're in the room with me right now.
No, not at all. No.
How was it for you? Like, most of us had worked together and knew each other for years. How was it for you coming into the cast as a new member?
Well, on one hand, I was like, if I make a fool of myself for auditions or callbacks, I never have to see these people again. that was my first thought. I was like, I can go. I can do this. I can push really hard and act insanely in these callbacks because none of these people will probably ever see me again if I don't get cast. And if I do get cast, then it worked.
And they will see you again because I think we're going to take a break right now. And maybe we can continue this story or we won't, depending on how it goes. But we have some of the cast of Arsenic and Old Lace, and they'll be kicking off on the Panada Theater starting on the 24th and a good run right after that. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I want to know more secrets about acting because I'm not an actor at all. So we'll be right back. So on 97.1 FM, we've got the cast, part of the cast of Arsenic and Old Lace. They're kicking it off here on the 24th on the Panadas Theater. And my co-host, Olivia, has a question.
Okay, so I'm a very big ritual person. And so I was wondering if there's any rituals that you guys do before shows to kind of prep yourselves, to get yourself in the headspace for your characters.
I don't have any because I haven't done a lot of shows before. So
okay.
No.
Okay. Gotcha.
I like to get to the theater early so I can feel the space and be there as everybody's coming in. I like to be happy and joyful and seem relaxed at the same time. So everybody else who's got those nerves going will be like, hey, he looks good. He looks cool. I'll just chill with him. We'll all be cool together. And then right as I'm about to go on stage, that's when the panic sets in.
Yeah, usually, yeah. Yeah, it's like the flight attendant method. Like, you can just kind of keep the face, serve the peanuts, be cool, exactly. Go freak out in the back.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Put on a brave face. And then because I'm something of a character actor, I always have a pose or something for earnest. when I was playing Algernon, I'd put my hand in a certain position, and then suddenly I'm in character. For this one, before I go on stage, I have a facial expression I make. It puts me in the Jonathan mood.
Okay, I love that. Yeah, because I know that like there's certain things, again, like poses or like sensory things or sometimes like smells or sounds that evoke and kind of help people get further into that. That's cool that you kind of have like a physical representation of getting into that mood, that character. I think that's, just a really... not underutilized necessarily, because in your guys' community it probably is, but even in my own professional capacity, I think sometimes that, oh, okay, well, I have to put my CEO hat on now, or I have to put my friend hat on. So it's kind of funny because we do, you know, a little bit of a form of that method acting in our own day-to-day lives.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I was getting a little note here about your tickets and your prices and where we can get those.
Tickets can be picked up at the Panada website, so panada.org. There's a link that takes you to our website, which is lporep.com, and the ticket prices are $25.
$25? Mm-hmm. That's a good deal, isn't it?
We think so.
I think so, too. Does a Panada give you kind of a deal? I mean, you get a pretty good price to be in there. I mean, that's quite the space. I mean, you're in there for quite a while, too, right? Aren't you? Yeah. Tell me more
about the Panada.
Yeah, is it a good place to work as far as helping you out? Is it are they?
We have a pretty long standing relationship with them, so there's some flexibility in that relationship versus people who come from out of town to perform there.
Right.
I think we've got a nonprofit rate as well.
Good. Yeah. So does it make money? I mean, at the end of the day, I mean. Does it make money at the end of it? Are you guys?
It makes money as it brings in money. This is the first show that we're really going to start analyzing how much money we brought in over the expenditures.
I've always wondered about that, you know. And we hope that it makes money because we keep people coming back that way for sure.
The rights for the show was like $500 per performance, and we're doing 6 performances. Then we've got the venue space rental, and we've got the costume and set budgets.
Right.
So at the end of the day, we've got to analyze all of that, how much we brought in versus how much we spent, and see if we have enough, which is one reason, like this whole year has kind of been a reset for LPO. You know, we lost Keely, like I said, she moved, and none of us really knew, how she was running the business. She liked to do that on her own, mm-hmm. which was what Keely did. None of us are... Keely, none of us want to be that kind of independent entity with a nonprofit. So we've kind of restructured the way that we conduct our nonprofit business, and analyzing and budgeting for an entire year, not just we have a show budget, but we've got to stagger our costs across the year and figure out how to bring in additional funds if there's shortcomings throughout.
Absolutely. You know, again, to keep it viable and keep it moving forward, you've got to have that plan for sure. And Keely made it look easy, and she was flamboyant, and she was great. I mean, yeah. We hit her a few times for sure, too. And you made plans, you said, for what you want to do the next couple of years that way, too. So I'm sure...
Oh, all that's out the window.
this blew it up, didn't it?
This year blew it up. Like, I was doing 3 shows at one time. I was prepping for Arsenic. I was finishing Patsy Cline and then wrapping up a film series. Like, we filmed 5 episodes from March to... I think we wrapped up early September. And so... Now that I'm the artistic director, it kind of put my 5-year plan at that point in time out the window,
right.
And I've got to restructure what I wanted to do because now I'm the artistic director. I've got to think about the company as a whole and what the artistic vision is,
yeah.
Which is why we're doing Midsummer next spring, because we don't have to pay rights. We've got to get a good foundation going, and we don't have to worry about paying a company to perform their play.
Let's bounce off that for a second, though, and go back to the film world that you do, too, because I don't know if many people know that, but tell us a little bit about your film background and what you you do there.
I incorporate film into pretty much everything. Like, Arsenic is approached from my film lens, like black and white. Like, I try to incorporate visual aesthetics within the shows that I do as well. And Midsummer, or not, Murder and Christmas Carol both had video packages built into the show. This is the first show I haven't done any sort of video element within it. But yeah, I've been doing film up since I've been back up here in the Fade world. Like we just finished and I've got a trailer out there for the next. It's called Retribution.
Tell us about that.
No, we're here to talk about arson.
No, we've got all sorts of time. I'm just curious. I think it's great that when people have many talents like you do, I mean, that's totally, they're kind of related, but they're not. I mean, again, it's a skill set over here and a skill set over here, and you bring them together.
Love of film is definitely seen in what I do on the stage and how I approach the story.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. I mean, Corey's been in both my shows, and there's... I'm trying to do shows that Sandpoint's never seen before as far as like the concept, the high concept type of stuff. Midsummer is going to be full high concept. So we're trying to bring something different to Sandpoint while performing shows everybody's familiar with.
Right.
The film world is, you know, I won't stop. After this Fade project is done, I'm going to start going into different directions. Fade's going to be done for now. But it's been 5 years living in that world.
Right, right.
And watching these kids grow up. Like the star, Alora, she's been with me since she was 12, doing the same character. And that's fun to watch them grow up on in front of the camera.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, again, you give them an opportunity to spread their wings, too. And I think that's a win-win for everybody, for sure. So back to Arsenic and Old Lace. See, that's a segue. It worked out really, really, really well. So, again, you have 16 different characters. You have 16 different people doing different things all the time. Is that like herding cats sometimes? I mean, it seems like it wouldn't be...
This show, not so much, because there's not as many. Christmas Carol was definitely one of those moments. It was, we had 40... people in that cast. It was crazy big.
Yeah.
This show, no.
And it's a little more sedate, too. You're not dancing around. You're not moving around. You've got kind of...
There's no set changes in the show at all.
Right, right.
That's a first for me. It's nice to not have to coordinate, you know, crew moving pieces across the stage at certain times. This is a stagnant set, so...
Yeah.
It's definitely a relief after coming out of Christmas Carol.
Yeah. Well, it's great to see the new talent, the older talent bubbling up this way, too. And I guess if you didn't have LPO, you wouldn't have that here. You know, we talked a little bit about some opportunities here, but you do casting calls. I mean, how did people find out about when you're doing something, a call up like that?
Well, the Midsummer auditions are already out. They're already posted and live. So I have a graphic that we submit with the audition announcement. And
that's online somewhere?
Mm-hmm. Okay. On Facebook and social media. Yeah.
Okay, good. And so for Midsummer, I guess we'll change the subject for one quick second. How many people would you expect to want to be in that play?
I think the cast is about 20 or under 20.
Okay.
So hopefully we get, you know, at least half or double that size or more so that we have some options.
And you'll have set changes there, though, I'm assuming, knowing what I know about that. Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
And so if you don't make the cut as an actor, is that what they used to do that in high school? Do they put you on the set committee? What do you do?
Most of them volunteer for it.
Okay.
We don't usually have to go out and hunt for people.
Right. Right, right, right. Well, very good. And I've really enjoyed our time today, too. You guys are awesome. I'm looking forward to it for sure. So let's go through the dates one more time.
All right.
And so we
open October 24th, October 25th. Both of those days are 7 p.m. shows. The 26th is a 2 p.m. show. And then we come back the following weekend on Halloween, October 31st, and on November 1st for 7 p.m. shows. And then the closing show is the 2nd at 2 p.m.
Great. And Toby, Corey, thanks for coming. My goodness.
Thank you for having us.
Why don't you give me one quick reason why somebody should come see you on stage?
Because it's really entertaining. You're going to laugh a lot.
Laugh a lot. Okay. Very good. Very good.
She stole my reason. It's so funny. It is so funny. Oh, and of course the artistry and support the local arts.
Well, again, Tim, thanks for stopping by today, too. And again, you can find the tickets where?
LPOrep.com.
Okay. And is it a You can sit wherever you want to in the Panada, I'm assuming.
Yeah, we're not doing the science
seating. You're not doing the science seating like other people are doing right now. Perfect, perfect, perfect. Well, again, thanks for a great discussion. I appreciate it. Olivia, thank you for riding shotgun with me. That was fun. We're trying to share one microphone, so we didn't want to do the creaking noise, which I won't do because Tag will like freak out if I do that. So he showed me the magic button, though. That's kind of cool. But again, Tim and company, thank you so much for what you do for our community. Looking forward to it. We'll be around. I'm sure you'll go to it. Olivia hits all those when she can, for sure, and I will try my best to do it as well. So until next time, everybody, thank you for listening. Thank you for enjoying this hour. It's been kind of unique having one group for the whole hour, but I think we answered a few questions. Olivia, what do you think?
I think so.
She says, I think so, since she's off mic right now. Again, nice meeting all of you, and we'll catch you next week on the radio.